From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of February, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net. Gary Schnitke will join us to discuss his latest article for the FarmDoc Daily website, this one on ECO and the harvest price exclusion. You want to listen to that one for sure as it relates to crop insurance. And then, as we close out our time together, Mike Tenner will be here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago to give us the forecast for the United States and South America, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net is out of the office this afternoon, but I most assure you that he will be with us over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on the 8th day of March for our Will Ag Farm Doc Spring Outlook. I hope you are as well. It'll be a great event. The cost is just $25. The whole of the Farm Doc team will be there. Many of the Will Ag panelists, 10 of them in fact, including Matt. Oh, and that's just before Matt heads off to the Commodity Classic, so you'll get a preview of what he's thinking about as he goes down there as well on that week. The cost, again, $25 online. Register today, and don't wait, because it's only a couple of weeks away now, at willag.org, or you can call this number, 217-333-7300. 217-333-7300. Jim McCormick is with us. He is also from agmarket.net. Jim, thank you for taking the time with us today. I appreciate that.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Todd.
Let's go through some of the numbers as they finished up in Chicago today. March corn was up 3 cents, finished at $6.50. The May at $6.49 and a quarter, up 3.5. And December new crop at $5.96 and a half, 2 3/4 higher. March soybeans at $15.92 a bushel, up 4.5. The May 4 3/4 higher at $15.96. New crop November at $14.60 and 3/4 of a cent, up 5 1/4. Bean meal 20 cents lower. Bean oil down 16 cents. Soft red winter wheat up 17.5 at $7.98. The hard red at $8.23, up 15. Those both in the March contracts. Live cattle futures at $146.77.5, 15 cents lower. Feeders were at $166.20, down $1.25. And lean hogs at $107.57.5, up $2.17.5. Jim, it seemed like today was a quiet day in Chicago. And still, the trading range in the lead options for corn and soybeans were about 10 cents and 30 cents, respectively. What happened there?
It was just a lot of volatility, Todd. You've got all this uncertainty going on in the Ukraine, no doubt about it. It seems like we're trading headline to headline. A lot of volatility, I think, was also going to be attributed to the long holiday weekend. The market in the grain complex is going to be closed Sunday night and Monday for the president's holiday. And a lot of school systems are taking Friday off as well. So I think you have a lot of traders that were positioning themselves for this long weekend, knowing that the uncertainty with what's going on between Russia and Ukraine is probably going to intensify as we get past the Olympics. So I think a lot of volatility there. The wheat market found some support on that news, as well as some of the long-range maps the government put out, as well as some of the private forecasters are arguing that we are going to have a warm, hot summer, especially in the Western Corn Belt, which seemed to give the wheat market a little bit of support as well.
And that's because things have been dry already there, and so warm and hot for the summer, anything would push that along pretty sharply. How important is it to the marketplace, given what's been happening with the drought in South America, for wheat to give a lift going into the spring months for the hard grains?
Well, I think it's very important right now, Todd, because the reality is this. I mean, we're looking at a lost production in South America. You know, the estimates are somewhere between roughly 35 to 36, 37 million metric tons. On the bean complex, on the corn complex, you're talking total losses between 23 and 25 million metric tons. Those are bushels that typically get exported into the world demand cycle. If you can't get it from South America, the question is, where are you going to get it from? And a lot of people say it's going to come to the United States. So now the battle's on to find out what acres we can get planted. Are you going to plant corn? You're going to plant wheat, spring wheat, that is. You're going to plant beans, sorghum, as well as some of these other commodities. On top of that, that may not be above enough. So the other thing the market's trying to figure out is maybe how high do we got to go to essentially ration demand? And that is so hard to do on food. It's easier to kind of ration demand on a TV. The TV tends to be more of a want than a need. You kind of need the food. So the demand for grains tends to be a little bit less elasticity. And right now the market's in a very tough situation. We're now trying to find out what price level we need to be to attract levels, production levels, as well as possibly ration out demand.
Yeah, so this is a southern hemisphere versus northern hemisphere sort of thing where you've got supply already cut in the southern hemisphere. In the northern hemisphere, you're looking at potential drought conditions, already some drought conditions in the United States for the hard red winter wheat growing regions. You're saying that the meteorologists are looking forward and not sure about what will happen out in that part of the United States going into the spring and summer months, could continue drought. That would be a problem for wheat. And then, of course, you couple that with Ukraine-Russia issues. Russia, number one exporter of wheat, I think, on the planet. And Ukraine, number four for corn, both of those in the northern hemisphere. It's about acreage in each of those. And then the ability to move that crop from the land out through, in this case, the Black Sea. And lots of things are just up in the air at this time. How do farmers consider all of that with old and new crop positioning? Because it appears that they've taken a wait-and-see attitude to this point.
I mean, right now, I think we're encouraging customers to, you know, as we get into this critical time period, there's a lot of uncertainty. Hopefully, we can come to a resolution in Europe. We also have some numbers coming out. The big numbers that people like to think about are the USDA acreage number, quarterly grain stock at the end of March. But we do have an outlook meeting put on by the USDA at the end of next week. That'll be the first time they give us a little bit of a peek of what they're thinking acreage-wise, yield-wise, and, you know, demand-wise into 2022. So we're encouraging customers right now. You've got some phenomenal prices. Consider buying puts, you know, short-dated puts for the new crop, as well as March or May, you know, May puts for the old crop to put a floor under this crop, Todd. Now, I know it's going to be expensive, and we know that, but, you know, the way we're kind of phrasing it is you're no longer, you know, the value of corn up here at $6.50 for old crop, almost $6 for new crop, beans near $16. You're not insuring a 1980s truck. You are insuring a brand spanking new Ferrari. It's going to be expensive, but the crop is very valuable, and you don't want to let these prices slip away if for some reason we had a black swan event.
USDA, of course, next week when they come out with that set of numbers, it will be the World Agricultural Outlook Board and NASA's best guess. The end of March numbers will be an actual survey of some 80,000 producers across the United States to get an idea of what they really think they're going to plant. I don't know that they do differ, certainly. And I'm wondering, given what you're hearing from producers, what you think those in the primary corn belt will do.
I think when it's all said and done, we're leaning more to a split. I think we're closer. You're going to see very close to 90 million acres of corn, 90 million acres of beans, I think, when it's all said and done, Todd. I know we're a little bit lower. I know there's some people that are saying more like 92, 93. But when you look at the input cost right now of trying to plant the corn crop, I know a lot of people did lock that in, but there's a lot of producers, unfortunately, did not do it. And then top of where I'm at, Northern Illinois, you had a lot of problem with disease pressure. You had a lot of problem with insect pressure. And you're in an area that's corn on corn on corn on corn. You know how that is, Todd. You plant those first round of beans after multiple years of corn on corn, you tend to get a nice yield boost. This may be the best year ever to do it. You're looking at 1450 plus beans. Why not shift it out of that corn and try to get rid of some of that disease pressure and take advantage of these higher prices, as well as maybe reduce some of your production costs due to the, you know, it's a less intensive fertilizer crop.
Inflation remains built into the marketplace?
I think it does. I think there's probably more to come at this point in time. We continue to see fund money come at the market very aggressively. And if you saw the latest readings, they continue to be hot. And my guess is you're going to stay a little bit hot until either A, the Fed starts raising interest rates, or at least on the food side of the equation, you start building stocks back. Because right now we are reducing stocks. You were mentioning the Ukrainians and the Russians. A third of the world exportable supply of wheat comes out of that part of the region of the world. So, you know, that's the fear everyone's got right there is, you know, what happens if there is a severe war? Are we going to be able to get that wheat out? Are they going to be able to plant the corn crop in the Ukraine? So it's a situation that as this world tightens supply, food inflation keeps getting more and more expensive. It's almost like a dog chasing its tail. Food prices get expensive. How do the industry hedge inflation? They come in and buy more food. They buy more grains, buy more commodity stocks, drives the prices higher, and it's just self-fulfilling. The only way we're really going to end this is you got to get high enough to kill off demand, or you got to have a big enough crop to satisfy that demand and bring the prices back down. And with the weather potentially being dry this summer, the more unlikely the volatility we've seen recently, it's probably only going to get more extreme instead of less extreme as we go into 2022.
That's Jim McCormick. He is with agmarket.net. Gary Schnitke has penned another article for the Farm Doc Daily website that normally happens each Tuesday of the business week. This time around, it's titled Enhanced Coverage Option, Return and Risk Results. Of course, it's about the ECO portion of crop insurance that producers will be signing up for by mid-March. SCO is covered as well, and Gary now joins us to talk about these programs. Gary, can you tell me a little bit about ECO?
Yeah, so this year we're going to have very high projected prices, but also very high costs. So we're looking at ways to protect what could be a good year. And one of those things is to have RP 80 and 85%. Both of those products are going to increase in price this year because of higher projected prices. So those items will not, if we even the 85% coverage level, if we begin triggering payments and we have the typical cash rent situation, will not cover all costs. So we can use ECO and SCO to lower the chance that we have losses in those situations.
Can you define the two products for me?
Yeah, ECO, Enhanced Coverage Option, provides a layer of protection that's county-based. So it's different than the farm-level RP policy, and you have to buy RP or RPHP and YP to buy ECO. But ECO provides a county-level protection from either 90 to 95% down to 86%. The 86% stopping point is because SCO starts at 86% and goes down to the coverage level of the RP policy.
How much does it cost, and should producers consider it?
Yeah, so let's give an example here. McLean County, 220 bushel APH yield, RP 85% will have a $30 per acre premium cost. So gives you a feel for what we're looking at there. And again, that's higher than last year. If we go to ECO 90%, which would provide protection from 90% and add SCO in it to 85%, we would have a total premium of $46. So that would add $16. And if we go to ECO 95%, so $46 for 90%, $72 per acre for ECO 95%, and including an RP 85 policy. I would note you can lower those ECO premiums. I'm using the highest protection level. You lower the protection level, you can lower the premium and the payments when they happen.
Why would you use these?
So, in that example, there's just to give cost will be about $1,050 per acre to put out that acre of corn, given the usual cash rent situation, $1,050. There's with just an RP 85% policy, there's a 1 in 3 chance that you will be below that number with RP 85, 1 in 3. You can reduce that to 26% with ECO 90 and 20% with ECO 95. So you can take a 1 in 3 event and move it down to 1 in 5. That obviously comes at a very high premium cost, and you have to weigh those costs. But over time, that ECO policy will pay out more than it's paid in because it's federally subsidized. So, over time, you would expect to have higher crop insurance payments from it than you make in it. But the year that's typical, you'd have $72 of premium, and that will obviously have reduced profits by $72, and that's quite a bit of the profit for 2022.
A few times over the lifespan of crop insurance, the February prices have been high for both corn and soybeans. I'm wondering if you're getting questions about how to use those high prices potentially as a risk management tool, maybe in concert with RPHPE or harvest price exclusion, and of course the ECO and SCO.
actually, the last time we were this high was in 2012, which was the drought year. So if you did RP-HPE, you would drop those premiums in half. So your RP 85% would go from $30 per acre to roughly $15, and that $72 premium would go from $72 to roughly $30. So, and you can look at our crop insurance decision tool to get a feel for that. Two caveats to that. Remember, you're giving up the harvest price exclusion. And so if you have, we have a drought year like 2012 again, you're not going to get paid as much, if anything, because if the harvest price goes up, that's countering the guarantee. And the number two thing is I would not be pre-harvest hedging a lot of grain if I'm using harvest price exclusion. And a lot of grain's open to some interpretation. I would say something like, if you're going to go over 50% of your expected production before harvest, don't use harvest price exclusion. But remember the drought year as well.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can learn more about ECO and SCO online. Visit the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and search for Gary Schnittke. Speaking of Gary Schnittke, he'll join us for the Will Ag Farm Doc Spring Outlook Tuesday, the 8th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you've not yet purchased your ticket, you should do that right now. You can do it in a couple of ways. I'll give you a phone number today, 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. Just tell them you'd like to purchase a ticket for the Spring Outlook at the Beef House, and they'll get you set up. Or you can, more importantly, go online, and this is easier all around, to willag.org, willag.org, and buy your ticket online right now. The cost is just $25. That includes Gary, the rest of the Farm Doc team, the Will Ag panelist, your Beef House lunch, that Beef House roll, and coffee in the morning. All the details are at willag.org. Get yourself registered for our Spring Outlook today. It's Tuesday, the 8th day of March. It's not too far away, and you need to be registered today. On this Thursday afternoon, let's check the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm. Thank you so much at tstormweather.net, Mike, for being with us today. Can we talk a little bit about the changing weather forecast and pattern as we head closer to spring? For instance, I made note that in the current weather that we're getting, if you look across some portions of the Midwest, including here in Indiana, Detroit, Michigan, I was looking at today as well. Flood warnings there. I'm wondering whether there's a pattern change that includes more rainfall or different events that are coming, what your assessment might be of kind of this next early season headed into the month of March.
Well, we're basically looking at the system that we have today that's producing a lot of rain and snow in the Corn Belt. The bigger part of the story, though, is what happens early next week, because a very similar system moves through, and that's going to dump a lot more rain on the same areas. So that means that by the time we get 1 week out, we'll have seen anywhere from 2 to 4 inches of rain across much of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and then points off to the south through Arkansas, Kentucky, and Tennessee. And once you add up that type of water at this time of the year, with the ground fairly saturated, partially frozen, it's a pretty easy recipe to produce river and field flooding. So we'll be looking at that once we get into the end of next week, and then possibly even leading into March, because all we need after that is one or two minor systems, and all of those will lead to areas of river and field flooding. So kind of a wet close to the winter. Meteorological spring starts on March 1st, and we should have wet conditions across the southeast half of the Corn Belt at that time. But with that all going on, off to the west, that's where we really need rain and snow. Off into these areas of Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, where we've been dealing with drought for a long period of time, it's not going to break anytime soon. We saw a little bit of snow over the last 24 hours, and we could see a little bit of snow here or there next week. But in the end, it doesn't look like a major pattern change for them, except that it will turn a lot colder next week, but we won't see a lot of rain or snow with that change.
Now, turn your attention to the southern hemisphere. South America has suffered through a drought in parts of Argentina, southern parts of Brazil. Will conditions change there? And is there a meteorological date for the beginning of fall, I suppose?
Well, it's the same date because meteorologists generally consider March 1st, the first day of spring, June 1st, the first day of summer, September 1st, the first day of fall, and then winter starts on December 1st. At least that's in the northern hemisphere. In the southern hemisphere, like you said, everything would be 6 months different. So that's just because of the way the actual weather and climate lines up as opposed to the exact day that the direct point of the sun crosses the equator and then reaches a different point. So that's kind of why we look at it that way. And it lines up a lot better because most people would agree that on June 1st, it feels pretty warm outside. We don't need to wait all the way until June 21st to start thinking it's going to be warm out. It certainly happens a lot earlier than that because of the lag between the seasons and the way the angle of the sun affects the earth. But all that said, Todd, what's happening in Argentina is that we still have this drought in place. It's been kind of bubbling up here and there over the last few months. We saw a pretty big rain back in the middle of January, but it's been pretty dry ever since. It's going to stay pretty dry until we get into next week. At that point, we'll start to see some rain and storms fire up. And we need to see a lot of rain to get out of this situation, but we think we'll see at least some helpful totals. 1 to 2 inches looks fairly likely over the next 2 weeks, with most of that starting up in about 5 days. And as long as that happens, that will allow us to have 1 or 2 good rains in March, and then maybe things could turn out okay for the soybean crop. It'd be pretty hard to have a great crop given how intense the drought's been at points in time until now, but we certainly could help things out because we're kind of getting into that August timeframe for their soybeans. It's kind of late in the season, and generally we know that rains are the best for soybeans later in the season. So maybe some improvement there. In Brazil, we've also had a drought on and off, and a pretty severe drought at that for a lot of the growing season. We're starting to see a little bit of a mix of weather where some areas turn dry, some areas turn wet. So the story there is not very clear cut anymore. Everything is focused on Argentina, and we think they will get a little bit of rain coming up next week.
Hey, thank you. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Yep, great being here.
That's Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather at tstormweather.net. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now, don't forget that you need to get yourself registered for the FarmDoc Spring Outlook. That's coming up on the 8th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is just $25. A couple of ways to register. You can call and ask about the Beef House event at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300, or go online at willag.org, willag.org, and you'll find all the details for the day's events and a way to get yourself registered. Again, it's at willag.org. It's public radio for the farming world.